one explanation.
The name Chanukah, Chesanun, stands for Chesneros. That's the name of Chanukah. There must be that eight Neros is extremely important. Something very important is happening when you light eight Neros. So let's talk a little bit about the name of Chanukah. There are three explanations for the name of Chanukah I'd like to mention. One, the Marsha gives Chanukas HaMizbeach. Simple, the rededication of the Mizbeach that happened at the time of the Chashmonaim. Then there's a Nutrikin, Rosh Tevos, every letter counts for something. Chanu B'Chavhei Kislev. They rested on the 25th day of Kislev. That's interpreted as the end of the war, the victory. That refers to the victory. So the first explanation refers to the Chanukas HaMizbeach. The second refers to the victory over the Yavanim. The third, which I'd like to talk a little bit more about, is Chanu. The Ches Nun stands for Ches Neros, V'Halocha Kebeis Hillel. There are eight Neros, and the Halocha is like Beis Hillel. That's referencing what? Machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says we light 8, 7, 6, 5, 4 going down, and Beis Hillel says we light 1, 2, 3, 4 going up. That's very problematic. If somebody had just told that to me, I would say that's very problematic, that Chanukah stands for Ches Neros V'Halocha Kebeis Hillel. The Chashmonaim were very fine Jews, but they never heard of Beis Hillel, because Hillel was born many years after the story of Chanukah. So this sounds apparently like an anachronism, out of time. Time is wrong. How could the name Chanukah come from? That's what somebody just came over to me and told me that this stands for Ches Neros V'Halocha Kebeis Hillel. I would have real trouble with that. But this was said by the Avudraham. That makes it very different. The Avudraham lived in the time of the Rishonim. He lived in Spain in the 1300s. And my computer tells me that he's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim 35 times, l'halocha. So he's very serious. He's not a non-serious person who said this. So we have to take this very seriously. However we solve the anachronism, however we solve the problem of how they could be referring to Beis Hillel, we could simply say that it wasn't called Chanukah till later. However we solve that, but apparently the halacha kebeis Hillel is so important that the Avudraham puts it into the name of a holiday. Why is that not just merely a detail, whether you do 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Isn't that just a detail? Why would you name the holiday after that? I mean, if somebody would tell me that Sukkot got its name from Cholim u'mishamshayim p'turim min ha-sukkah, or that the minimum shear is Zion al Zion, and you'd somehow say that's the size of Sukkot, so we call a holiday for that. I mean, it's got to be really important. Something must be very important about Halacha Kebeis Hillel that we name Chanukah for that, according to the Avudraham. So what does Beis Hillel say? Beis Hillel says, Mosif Aholich. You go up. Malin Bakodesh. You don't stay the same. You move up. When it comes to spiritual things, when it comes to mitzvos, if you started with one candle, then you got to shoot for two candles. Ches Neros goes into the name because that's the goal. You're shooting for more and more, and finally you get to Ches Neros. When you start and you only have one Ner, don't go right to eight, because you're not going to make it. You've got to go one step at a time. You add one neir, and then another one. And before you know it, you've actually achieved 8 neiros. At the time when you're lighting one, it almost seems impossible. How could I get all the way up there? One step at a time. So I want to talk a little bit about 8 neiros. I want to talk about big goals, because that's what the name Hanukkah comes from. I want to talk about really big goals. And I might have been reluctant years ago, but I've learned a lot about Torah Tshraga guys from Rev. Roblowski, who sets great goals. And if he would have asked me a number of years ago, I would say impossible. Those challenges, it's impossible. And I've learned from you guys over the years that it's not so. We can shoot for big goals. And so let me talk about some big goals. I want to talk about attitudes. Attitudes are important. And having a different attitude, sometimes you can only do that a step at a time, a little bit at a time. And I got to say, I'm still working on some of these things myself. This is not somewhere that I've achieved something and I'm talking to you about it. I'm talking about things that I'm trying to achieve. How important are attitudes? Well, right now, we are between having read Parsha Miketz, and we're going to be reading Parsha Vayigash. And so we are in the middle of the time when Yaakov is mourning for Yosef. 22 years. 22 years Yaakov mourned for Yosef. Me'ein l'hisnachem, the Pasuk says. And so we're all very influenced by the drash that since Yosef was alive, he could not be comforted. But the pshat is not that way. Pshat is me'ein l'hisnachem. He refused. It was an active act on his part. It might have been natural for him to have already been comforted. Time goes on, people feel better. He refused for 22 years. Why did this happen to him? So we're told that he did not perform Kibbud Av V'Em for 22 years. He was away from home for 22 years. And so he was punished grievously. 22 years of missing Yosef. And that's very difficult. Kliyoka raises the problem. He went away because his parents told him to go. Yitzhak and Rivka told him to go away. How could he be punished for 22 years for listening to his parents? So you could say, well, he should have come home earlier, but still, there's at least 7 years there where he was listening to them. Because he went there, he was told to marry Lavan's daughter. That took at least 7 years. Why was he punished for 22 years? So the Kliyoker says, well, it says, Vayetze Yaakov. Yaakov left his home. It would be enough to say that he came to Haran. That's really what's important there. Why does it say that Yaakov left? So the Kliyoker says, he left. Sometimes you can leave home and you're always thinking about your father and your mother. You're always thinking about your home. Yaakov left. He dropped it. He didn't think about his family. And that's why he was punished. Because Yosef later, who was very close to Yaakov, names his son Menashe, Ki Nashani Elokim, Hashem made me forget my home. I don't understand what happened here. I would have loved to remember my home. I would have sent a message home. I would have told my father I'm alive. But Hashem made me forget as punishment for Yaakov's leaving home and forgetting his home, dropping. That's very difficult. I don't understand. understand the Kli Yakar. What difference does it make what his attitude was? He couldn't do Kibbut Ava'im. That's the main point. He couldn't do Kibbut Ava'im. He couldn't serve them tea. He couldn't do things for them. And the reason why he couldn't do that is because they sent him. What difference does it make what his attitude was? You see from the Kli Yakar's point of view what the thought process of a Gadol is. It's all about attitude. Sure, he couldn't have been home anyway. Sure, he couldn't have done Kibbut Ava'im anyway. But his attitude was that he left home. Bottom line, doesn't make a difference. He couldn't do Kibbut Ava'im either way, whatever his attitude was. But bottom line, that's Olam Hazeh talk. That's physical talk. The Neshama doesn't talk bottom line. The Neshama talks about attitude. His attitude was that he left home, he forgot his home, and for that he was punished grievously. Fantastic message. Attitude is very important to the Neshama. We're not so aware of the Neshama. The guf we can feel right away. We're tired, we hurt, that comes right away. What hurts on Neshama, we don't feel so strongly. But the Neshama is part of us. I heard from Dr. Bernard Branson, who's a professor of psychology in the Graduate Department of Psychology at Queens College. He said that most of therapy, psychological therapy, is about introducing people to parts of themselves that they're unaware of. Most therapy cases are about people who are unaware of their emotions, don't know about the emotional part of themselves. Sometimes people actually think that's bad emotions. Anything emotional, they squelch. They try to deny it. And so Dr. Branson said that therapy, most cases, is about introducing a person to a part of himself that he doesn't want to deal with and doesn't deal with. Well, this world is a mushal for spiritual things. That's a physical thing. It's about a body. It's about a person in his physical nature, what Dr. Branson said. That's a mushal for our spiritual identity. Not to be aware of part of ourselves, not to be dealing with the spiritual part, that's damaging. And so that is one big goal. To be aware of the part of us that we're not so aware of, our neshama, what our neshama needs, what it wants. We don't feel it. And that's a very big part of what you're doing here in Eretz Yisrael this year. Becoming aware of that part of yourself, of the neshama, what it needs, what it wants, how to handle it. I want to talk a little bit more about big goals in Bein Adam L'Chavera, relations with others. And I have a story that will drive the point home. Somehow, maybe we don't understand how important Bein Adam L'Chavera is, how important relations with others, how we deal with other people, how important that is. So I'm going to go back to a story during World War II. It's well known that the American government didn't want to do anything to help rescue European Jews. And it hadn't yet come the time when American Jews were active and demanding. It wasn't yet the days of the student struggle for Soviet Jewry. People went out, made demands on the American government, and the American government responded, brought up the issue of Soviet Jewry when they dealt with the Russians. Presidents, Secretary of State all did that. There was nothing like that happening during World War II. There were very few people who did anything, who tried to do anything. Rav Soloveitchik later criticized the Jewish leadership during World War II and said his response was inadequate. One person who didn't ignore the problem was a recent immigrant, Rav Aaron Kotler, founding Rosh Yeshiva of the Lakewood Yeshiva. With the help of Mr. Irving Bunim, who was an American successful businessman, got very close to Rav Aaron Kotler. Rav Aaron got a meeting with the Secretary of the Treasury, who was probably the most powerful Jew in America at the time. He was a Jewish man named Morgenthau. How he got the meeting, I don't know, but he got a meeting with Morgenthau to try to convince him to raise the problem, the desperate situation, the pikuach nefesh situation of European Jews, to raise that with the American government, with Franklin Roosevelt, who didn't want to hear about it. And so Rav Aaron didn't speak any English, so Irving Bunim was a translator. Morgenthau didn't speak any Yiddish. And Morgenthau said he can't raise it. He can't talk to the president. And Rav Aaron said something very sharp. Rav Aaron had a way of speaking. I heard a shiur from Rav Aaron. Came to our yeshiva, gave a shiur. And we were too young to really appreciate, to understand him. The one thing I took away from the shiur was, here is a person who is trying desperately to talk as fast as his mind was going, and he wasn't able to do it. He talked rapid fire with tremendous feeling, but he couldn't catch up with his mind. It's quite clear from the way he gave the shiur. That's all I got from the shiur. But so Rav Aaron, rapid fire, with a lot of emotion, said something to Morgenthau, and Irving Bunim realized that he couldn't translate it. So he said something very mild, and Morgenthau got it. And he said to Bunim, tell me what the rabbi said. And so Bunim had no choice. But the rabbi said, you're afraid of losing your position. The lives of European Jews is more important than your keeping your job. Morgenthau put his head down, and he said he would talk to Roosevelt. I think it's safe to say that Rav Aaron cared deeply about the fate of European Jews. Rav Aaron founded an organization. He spearheaded the founding of the Vaad Hatzalah to try to save people. And although he was the spirit behind it, he couldn't really do the work because he didn't speak English, so he hired a capable person, told him how important it is, and that person was a capable administrator. And realizing what was going on, he ate quickly at his desk, didn't sleep very much, worked day and night, and it was too much for him. So he hired somebody. Hired an assistant. The assistant wasn't any good. He made it even harder. Now the administrator had to clean up the messes that this guy made, and you know, he couldn't keep him. So he fired him. This assistant who was just fired came to Rav Aaron and said, you know, he just said you're fired. He didn't explain anything to me. He didn't give me some advice that might help me for my next job. He just said, you're fired. But Byron called in the administrator and said, what happened here? So he said, well, you know, he really wasn't any good. He didn't help me. He made things worse. So what did you do? I fired him. Did you explain? Did you give him some advice? No. Rosh Yeshiva, I don't have time to eat. I don't have time to sleep. I can't sit down with him. So Rav Aaron said to this man who was working on saving European Jews, if you don't have the time to treat this person properly, then do less. Let me let that sink in. Rav Aaron, who obviously knew the stakes, who actually told the Secretary of Treasury of the United States that what was going on here was more important than his job, Reb Aaron said, do less. How do we understand that? Reb Aaron Kotler did not have to be told that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kol HaTorah Kula. But here we get a sense of how important Bein Odom L'Chavero is, how important relations with others are. Reb Aaron's judgment was that if this is going to work, we need Hashem on our side. We need Siyata D'Shmaya, we need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help. And if we don't treat people properly, he's not going to be on our side, no matter what the stakes are, no matter what's going on here. That attitude, that awareness of the importance of Bein Odom L'Chavero, the recognition of that, that's eight candles. That's up there. That awareness that when you're talking to somebody else, when you're dealing with somebody else, your relationship with somebody else is that important. Let me tell you another story about another gadol and Bein Odom L'Chavero, relations with others. Except I can't tell you who this gadol is. I'm not sure what he looks like because I just got a fleeting sight of him for a second. And this story is not about great things. It's not about saving European Jews. It's about carry-on luggage. You know carry-on luggage? You know the little thing that you put in the overhead? So I travel a lot, Baruch Hashem, back and forth to America. And after traveling a lot, I've had various experiences. One time I came to my brother's house in Toronto for Yontif, and the bags didn't come, so I didn't have my suit for Yontif. And after a little bit of experience like that, I realized that anything that's really important to me has to go into the carry-on. So there's a lot there. There's, of course, a talis and tefillin, whatever documents, whatever important papers. There's svarim that I can't easily replace, notebooks that I can't replace at all. You know, it adds up a lot. And then one time I came onto a plane, and there was no room for the carry-on. And so they said, we've got to take it away and put it with the other luggage. And then I said, well, now I have to take everything out. So carrying, it was a little challenging. So then I realized that I have to do whatever I can to get onto the plane as soon as possible. So I inch up and I get online, try to get as fast to get carry-on up there so they don't take it away. And then I realized there were a lot of other people doing the same thing. We're all looking at each other. You know, everybody's going. Those people who had this kind of experience were all trying to get the stuff into the overhead. And then it happened again. I'm just carry-on, and I'm trying to get into this one. I try to get into that one. And then before I know it, somebody's tugging on my carry-on, grabs it, pulls his down, puts mine up in his place, and then by the time I realized what happened here, he was gone because he ran down between all the other people to find a place for his because he cared about having his up there. So I didn't really get a good view of him, but I thought to myself, wow, this guy must get up in the morning and think, what can I do for somebody else? Not, what can I do for me? Not, it's all about me, but what can I do for somebody else? He must look for opportunities to help somebody else. And I sat in my seat and I thought to myself, it's not just what he did, it's when he did it. You know what you feel like when you come to the airport? Usually people are exhausted, they maybe didn't sleep the night, you have to get there at a certain time, and then you got the long lines, and then, you know, maybe my thing is, oh, that's all about me. I'm tired. I'm standing on lines. What am I going to do with overweight luggage? What am I going to do? That's all about me. This is prime time for all about me. What was this guy doing? Thinking about what he can do for somebody else. That's eight candles. This is something I'm working on. I'm not working on taking down my carry-on, putting on somebody else's. That I'm not even going to try that. But just thinking about other people, you know, how does it work? How does it work? You have a conversation with five people. What are you thinking? What do you think? Like, five people are talking together. What does a person think? What can I say that's really good, that'll look good? What can I? Okay, you know, why not contribute something good to the conversation? But, you know, while somebody else is talking, I'm thinking about what I could say that's really good here. How about what you said was very good? How about quoting somebody else? How about making somebody else feel good? This is everyday simple stuff. Everyday simple stuff. This is neshama stuff. This is big stuff. This is eight candles. This is something to work on. I'm still working on it, a little bit, one step at a time. All about attitudes. Wake up in the morning and think about what I can do for somebody else. When I'm learning Torah, there are different levels. There's one, the simple level, I want to understand what's going on here. I want to understand it well. But at the same time, when you're learning Torah, you're connecting up with Hashem. That's an attitude. An attitude while I'm learning, this is where I connect up with Hashem. This is where Hashem is today. Hashem says, I have nowhere else in the world but the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha. There's no Beis HaMikdash anymore. How do I connect up with Jews? How do I connect up with the neshamas? Our neshama is part of Hashem. Chelek Elokam Imal. How do I connect up with Hashem when I learn Torah? To have that in mind, to have that awareness, it's all about awareness. When I'm learning Torah, I am connecting up my neshama. I don't feel my neshama, but my neshama knows what's going on. It's connecting up with Hashem. When I daven, okay, there's stuff I want to ask for. That's the place to ask. That's the only way to get what you want in the world, is by asking. That's Shema Kolenu. The Rav pointed out there are two brachos in which we ask Hashem to accept our tefillos. Shema Kolenu Hashem Elokeinu. And then there's Ritzei. Shei Hashem Elokeinu B'Amcha Yisrael U'Besfilosam. Same thing. Why do we have two brachos asking Hashem to accept our tefillos? We can say the first one, Shema Kolenu, that's about everything we just asked for. Everything we ask for. Stuff that's on the list, you know, Das, Refuah, Parnosa, and then anything that we want, we add. We can add that to tefillah. Everything we want, that's the place to get it. And then we ask Hashem to accept what we asked for. It should be for our good. But there's something else going on when we're davening. We're connecting up with Hashem. We're thinking that we're talking to Hashem. Mind-boggling. Talking to Hashem. That's what it's about. I'm talking to Hashem. I'm connecting up. My neshama is connecting up with its source. Chelek Elokam Imal. It's connecting up. Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu B'Amcha Yisrael. Accept us. Not necessarily what we're talking about, but this other thing that's going on with your davening. Connecting up with Hashem. Hashem, accept us, because we've just connected up with you. It's a different attitude when you start davening, to be thinking, of course, what I need, what I want, what to ask for, but also this is an experience of connecting up with Hashem. My neshama, connecting up with Hashem. So all these things are things to work on. But I say it to you because I believe that this is all very gettable for you. Because I've learned over the years to expect great things and to believe that you're capable of it.
Gentlemen who can lead us in Mincha? Lunch is in 10 minutes. You can lead us?